All right, and let us share screen, and here we go. Okay, so the mixtape is finally built. It's unclear, by the way, if this is happening after 7 years or after 20 years. You could go either way, but definitely the Mikdash has been built, if not also Shlomo's palace. And the pasuk begins, even the beginning here is said with a particular fanfare. Old Yakel Mosh Shlomo. I almost said Moshe, this is Parsha. So, all right, it's at that point that Shlomo gathers as Zikne Yisrael, as Kol Rashei Hamatos. He gathers all the leaders towards him to Yerushalayim, Lahalos es Aron Bris Hashem, Meir David Hitzion. So a couple of things to unpack over here. Point number one is the fanfare of the pasuk, right? This isn't something that happens every day. As the Dan Mikra points out, this is an Oz Yakel Shlomo. You're supposed to get excited as you read this. I wonder if it is deliberate that this evokes the beginning of our parsha this week, Vayakel Moshe, Toledas B'nai Yisrael. We're going to see there are going to be a number of references in the dedication of the beginning of the Mikdash to the completion of the Mishkan, which we have in Vayakel and in Pekudei. So I wonder about that. The Malbim notes that Shlomo, why is Shlomo inviting all the Zakenim here? So he explains there's a halacha that's going on, which is Shlomo is about to invest the Mikdash and Yerushalayim with Kedusha. In fact, we're going to see that's going to be one of the major themes over here is going to be not just opening a building, but for the first time really in history, we're going to have a place which is going to be completely transformed, the Kedusha given to a location. And the halacha is in order to invest the Yerushalayim with Kedusha, you need the Sanhedrin. So he says that's why Shlomo is reaching out to all the Zakenim, all the leaders. You need all members of the Sanhedrin. That's what he says over here. Two other points already just coming out of Pasuk Aleph. One, and both of these are going to be themes, by the way, they're going to pervade what we're going to see today. Is that we're calling this the dedication of the Mikdash. But that's not what the Pasuk says, right? The Pasuk doesn't say they all came to Shlomo lechanech et HaMikdash or something like that. Why are they coming to Shlomo? Laha'alos es Aron Bris Hashem. They are coming to bring the Aron into the Mikdash. We are placing a tremendous amount of value and emphasis on the Aron Kodesh, and we need to figure out why. But we should just note this. After two prakim, where we talked all about the amazing building that Shlomo has constructed, we're not talking here about karbanos. We're not talking about anything else. We're taking Moshe Rabbeinu's Aron, we're taking Bezalel's Aron, and we're bringing that into the Mikdash. That seems to be the climactic event, and we need to figure out why. The last thing to note from this pasuk is that I do not think it's a coincidence that the pasuk seems to say something unnecessary. It says, "Lahalos es Aron Bris Hashem Meir David Itzion," from the city of David, which is Tzion. Now that invites the obvious question, right? Well, if you say it's the Ir David Hitzion, so why do you have to say Ir David? No. If you're going to say, I brought something from the Windy City, which is Chicago, so I would ask, well, why did you bother calling it the Windy City? Just say you brought something from Chicago. So we clearly see the Navi is going out of its way to invoke the name of David. As we talked about this last week as well, Shlomo is trying to do two things at once. On the one hand, he has to be his own man because David was not able to build the Mikdash. David was a man of war, and the Mikdash has to be built by a man of peace. And Shlomo may have gone above and beyond that requirement in two respects. Number one, as we saw, by not having any metal tools for any of the stones of the whole Mikdash, not only Mizbeach. Number two, possibly, by not using any of the treasure, any of the resources that had been amassed by David. It's possible that Shlomo, Rabbi Nel argued this way, that Shlomo didn't use any of that for the Mikdash. He uses only things he had procured by himself. That's why at the end of the construction, the Navi told us that, oh yeah, and Shlomo brings all the Kodshei David, all the things that David has set aside, Shlomo brings, almost as if it's an afterthought, because he really wants to not use the blood obtained things from his father. But at the same time, there's no question that when you think Mikdash, you have to think David. David's the one who conquers Yerushalayim. David's the one who acquires Har HaBayis. David's the one who establishes the kingdom. David's the one who educates Shlomo. David's the one in whose zechus all of this is happening. So, and we saw last week the beginning of the construction of the Mikdash and the end of the construction of the Mikdash both mentioned David. So the looming presence of David is something we keep coming back to, and that seems to be yet again something the Navi is doing over here. Where was the Aron brought from? Meir David, Hitzion. Now, what is the Aron doing over there? So back in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Beis, so well, just a quick refresh on the history of the Aron. So the previous great Mishkan was the Mishkan at Shiloh, in the land of Ephraim, north of Yerushalayim. That was destroyed in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, when the Plishtim invaded. They then captured the Arod and brought it to the land of the Plishtim. Chazal think that actually Goliath, the giant Goliath, was the one who took the Arod. While the Arod is in the land of the Plishtim, terrible Makos strike the Plishtim, Makos, which very clearly evoke the Makos of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And so the Plishtim eventually relinquish the Aron, and the Aron goes back to Bnei Yisrael. But Bnei Yisrael do not have anywhere which is a good place to put the Aron. The Mishkan, which was at Shiloh, has been destroyed. So they keep the Aron for 20 years in a tent at Kiryas Yearim, the place where it had been brought to. And then when David conquers Yerushalayim, so David, with great fanfare, brings the Aron to Yerushalayim. That's the episode where he has the big fight with his wife Michal, and the Aron then resides in a tent in Yerushalayim. For all of David's reign, the Aron and the Mishkan are in two separate places. The Mishkan is at Givon, the town north again of Yerushalayim. We saw this actually when Shlomo had his famous dream where Hashem gives him wisdom. So the Navi told us that Shlomo wanted to go offer Karbanos. He had to leave Yerushalayim. He had to go to Givon to offer the Karbanos because that is where the Mishkan had been set up. But the Aron itself was residing in Yerushalayim in the tent where David had brought it at the beginning of his reign. So you have the Aron and the Mishkan have been apart for about 30 by now. Well, 33 years of David's reign, a little less than that, and at least 11, if not more. So almost 50 years we're talking. The Mishkan has been separate from the Aron, more than that, whatever. And now it's being brought from Ir David, where David brought it, to the Mikdash. Okay, Pasuk Beis tells us, in the month of Esanim, which is the month of Tishrei. Chazal have a drasha about this. The word Eitan means mighty, right? Which is a shorthand for the Avos in general and for Avraham in particular. Gemara calls Avraham the Eitan Ha'olam, right? The mighty one of the world. And they say that the Zechus of Tishrei is that is the month where Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were born. So anyway, it's in that month. It's in the month of Tishrei. The Chag. What is the Chag? The Chag, the same as nowadays, right? Stam Chag is Sukkos. So it's the time of Sukkos, more or less. Hu HaChodesh HaShvi'i, when this is all happening. One of the modern Mefarshim I saw pointed out this seems to get at yet another theme we've seen in the construction of the Mikdash. It is a little surprising for Shlomo to choose Tishrei as the month where everything happens. First of all, that means he has to wait a long time. Because the Mikdash was completed in Cheshvan. So if you want to wait, if you want to then have your dedication to the Mikdash, Tishrei is like the least convenient month, no? Because it's like all the way around, you got to wait. So Shlomo clearly is choosing a particular month, and he's going out of his way to choose Tishrei. Why would he choose Tishrei? Compounding the question is the previous great dedication we had, the dedication of the Mishkan, was done in the month of Nisan. Now, Nisan is when the Mishkan is dedicated in Parshas Shemini. So why does Shlomo abandon Chodesh Nisan and instead intentionally choose Chodesh Tishrei? Very surprising. So I don't know if it was the Dat Mikra or somebody in the VBM, but the answer seems pretty clear that this once again is Shlomo's attempt to emphasize that the Mikdash is not only a house for Bnei Yisrael, but that the Mikdash has international ambitions. We want this to be a house for everybody. Ki vesi vesi tefila yikare lechol ha'amim. And Tishrei is the international month. In the Jewish calendar, we have 2 months, which are the first month of the year. Nisan is the first month of the year. But it's only the first month of the year for Jews, right? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, right? For Klal Yisrael, Nisan is the first month. It's the first month for us because that's the month when we had Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is the ultimate example, is really the exemplar of something which is only between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. Nobody besides us and Hashem has any special connection to Nisan. Tishrei, on the other hand, is the first month for the whole world. We know the whole world is judged on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a universal day. Of all three Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, Sukkos Dafka is the international Chag, right? That's the Chag where we have the 70 Karbanos for the 70 nations. In fact, Sukkos has such an international emphasis that what do we then need to do to restore the balance at the end of Sukkos is we have to then have that extra day of Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah, right? There's no need at the end of Pesach to have a special Shmini Atzeres. But after Sukkos, where we have 70 Karbanos for 70 nations, there is. That's why on Sukkot, on Shmini Atzeres, we have only one bull, right? We have 13 bulls, 12 bulls, 11 bulls on Sukkos. Shmini Atzeres, we have only one. So Tishrei is the international month. That's the argument that Shlomo is deliberately picking this to emphasize the international ambitions of the Mikdash. Okay, everyone comes to Shlomo, to Yerushalayim, by Kol Zeknei Yisrael, by Yisu HaKohen and Aharon. The Kohanim are carrying the Aron like they are supposed to. Vayalos Aron Hashem, ve'es Ohel Moed. What is the Ohel Moed? Rashi and most of the Mefarshim say that this is the original Mishkan, right? The Ohel Moed that we have so many times in the Chumash. So what happened to it? So they had folded it up. Well, now that we're building the Mishkan, it's time to put it away. So they bring all the Ohel Moed, says Rashi, Sha'asa Moshe. Gunzo Shlomo Mishanivne Bayis Rishon. So Shlomo puts this away in the underground foundation, the storehouses of the Mikdash, when we're building the first Beis HaMikdash. The idea here that Rashi is emphasizing is the titanic transformation which is taking place. Right? We venerate the handiwork of Bezalel. In Parshas Shavuot, we've been talking about it for a few weeks, and we'll talk about it for a couple weeks more, especially this year, because this year is non-leap as a leap year. So we got Vayakhel and Pekudei and Vayikra and Tzav and Shmini. We got 5 weeks, unless anybody cheats and gives Purim drashos. But otherwise, we've had Mishkan for 3 weeks in the past. We got Mishkan for 5 weeks in the future. So Shlomo is taking that Mishkan, but now that it is the world of Mikdash, things are changing, and it is time. Chas v'shalom, not to throw out the Ohel Moed, but it's time to put it in the Geniza. It's time to move on. We bring all of that to the Mikdash, to Yerushalayim. Okay, Pasuk Hey, v'melech Shlomo v'chol Adas Yisrael, all of Adas Yisrael, hanoadim alav, who came to him. The Malbim here says there's a difference between Vayakel and Noadim. When you have a kehila, that means that you gathered them. At the beginning of our parsha, Vayakel Moshe. So Moshe leps all Bnei Yisrael together to tell them something. The Malbim says when you have this, you have an Eda, that is a spontaneous congregation. That's a congregation you don't need to bring them to you. An Eda, as a kehila, that's a gathering where they come to, where you bring them. An Eda, they come to you. They come spontaneously. So the Malbim says that even though Shlomo only invited the leadership, spontaneously, the whole nation decides to come, right? Kol Adas Yisrael, everyone decides, I can't miss this, and they're all coming to the Mikdash. But what are they doing? They are Lifnei Ha'aron, right? They're all before the Aron. Once again, the emphasis on the Aron Kodesh, which is being brought into the Mikdash. Mizabchim tzonu bakar lo As they are proceeding towards the Mikdash, towards the end, towards the Mikdash, they're offering karbanos, right? So they're offering karbanos as they walk, which cannot be counted because of how numerous they are. We are not going to see karbanos again for a while. We should make a note of that. At least here, the pasuk just tells us that the innumerable karbanos, all of the wealth of Shlomo is being put towards karbanos over here. Fine. Pasuk Vav, the dot mikra has a very important insight, which is going to hit the theme, one of the major themes of this paragraph. Ve'aviyu hakohanim es aron bris Hashem, el mikomo, el devir habayis, el kodesh hakadoshim, el tachas kanfei hakruvim. Now, you don't need the color coding to point out there's something very strange about this pasuk, which the dot mikra reflects. You could have just said they brought the aron You could have brought the Aron to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. No, this is like begging you to notice how over the top repetitive this is. They brought the Aron to its place, to the Dvir, to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, underneath the Kruvim. Okay, I know. Why do you have to say that again and again and again? So the Mikra makes a literary point. We'll see in a second the Meshech Chachma is going to combine that with a halachic point. The literary point, which Navi is clearly trying to make over here, is we are placing a ton of emphasis on the value, on the importance, on significance of the location where the Aron is being brought to its place, right? Its destined spot. And we're being hyper specific. Where is going to its spot? It's going to the Dvir. It's going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's going to the Tachas Kanfei HaKruvim. In other words, we have this whole massive building which has been built, and the Navi is shifting all of our attention we've had for two Prakim. We're not focusing on the Yachanu Boaz pillars. We're not focusing on the Yamshel Shlomo Mikvah. We're not focusing on the stone. We're not focusing on the wood. We're not focusing on the gold plating. We're not focusing on any of that. We are focusing on this one spot. There is a place on earth where the Aron Kodesh belongs. There's a very specific place where the Aron Kodesh belongs, and that is where we are headed. What is so exciting about this moment is not dedication of Mikdash per se. What is so exciting about this moment is the Aron Kodesh finally is going to the place where it is supposed to go. This concept of the Makom Ha'aron, there is a designated location where the Aron is supposed to be, where the Aron was always supposed to be, is redoubled in Pasuk Zion. Yeah, Kruvim Parsim Kenafayim, the Kruvim spread their wings. These are Shlomo's Kruvim from a couple of Prakim ago, El Makom Ha'aron, they spread their wings over the Makom Ha'aron, the place where that Aron belongs. Vayasoku HaKruvim Ala Aron Valbadav Milamala. And the Kruvim spread their wings over the Aron and over the poles. Okay, this idea of Aron is going to come up several times. I just want to jump ahead for a second to see one line of Pasuk Kaf Aleph before we see a line from the Meshech Chachma. Shlomo, in a few psukim, this is going to be the same parak, we're just cheating a little bit, so I put this in gray. He's going to say when he his first tefillah to Hashem, the shorter one, the one that we will see today, Mirza Hashem, he says, "Va'asim sham makom la'aron." So after he talks to this whole house that he built, he says, "I made a spot for the aron, asher sham bris Hashem." And the aron contains the covenant of Hashem, meaning the luchos, asher karas mavosina beotzi ameretz Yisrael. Okay, fine. So focus on the fact that Shlomo, after building this whole massive house, focuses yet again on this place for the Aron that he has made. The Meshech Chachma at the end of Pekudei. So he has a couple of short pieces on the Haftorah for Pekudei. Haftorah for Pekudei, it's rare that we read it because either it's a double parsha, in which case you read Vayakel, or like this year, it's a single parsha, but this year Pekudei is going to be. This year we will read it, no? We will, right? This week is Shkalim. Right, so yeah, so next, so we'll read this the next week. We'll read after Parshas Pekudei. So that'll be exciting. Pay attention because after Parshas Pekudei is our parak, the dedication of the Mikdash. So the Meshech Chachma has a short piece in Haftorah over there, and he writes the following. He says on this line that Shlomo made a place for the Aron. So he says Yitachin the Shlomo Kivein Shiyehei Makom Ha'aron Kadosh B'Kedushas Ha'aron. That the spot where the Aron belongs has the same sanctity as the Aron itself. Now that has a halachic consequence, which is relevant to Yom Kippur. Le'in Ketores Shel Yom HaKippurim, when the Ketores of Yom Kippur was burned, V'hazoz Bein Habadim, and when the Kohen Gadol sprinkles the blood between the poles of the Aron. Second base of Mikdash, we don't have any Aron. So what exactly do we do? Well, if the enemy takes away the Aron, Yasu Kamosha Hayabashini. So then they would do exactly what was done during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Chumod Parakotziolo, like was done in in Masachas Yuma, the Gemara says in the fifth parak of Yuma, Evan Shasiya Haisasham. Right? We know the Evan Shasiya, right? The foundation stone. Where was the foundation stone? It was in the Kodesh HaKadashim. Chazal said a tradition, that's where the world was created from. And that is a special spot where the Aron is being brought. Right? So the Aron is being brought to its primordial location, to the Evin Shasiya, And Shlomo is not only focusing, points out the Meshech Chachma, on the Mikdash and on the Aron, but he is imbuing the Evan Shesia itself with the same sanctity as Aron. We must have Yom Rishon HaYishtam, right? It was there from the very beginning. Right? And he says, he quotes the Rambam, and the Rambam said, based off of the Gemaras, that the Shlomo knows Mikdash is going to be destroyed. We'll see where this comes from later on when we talk about Shlomo's tefillah. And so therefore, already at this stage, the place itself is being given the sanctity of the Aron. In other words, what we can basically take, and I want to look at the Gemara in Yuma a second just so we know a little bit more about it, but the basic idea that they're all getting at over here is that, in a sense, the Aron itself, right, that utensil, which has always been the seat of the Shechina, that is now being transferred to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to the actual spot. In the Midbar, whatever spot the Aron was on didn't have any real Kedusha. Har Sinai nowadays doesn't have any real Kedusha, right? The Shechina was there, and now it's gone, right? It was relevant at the moment, but that's it. The whole time, ever since the Aron was constructed, so the Shechina abode upon the Aron, and wherever the Aron was, that's where the Shechina was. What's happening now, so the first time in history, there is a transfer of Kedusha, the Aron's Kedusha, i.e., the place which is designated for Ashras HaShechina on earth, that is now being shifted to the spot, this Makom Ha'aron, right? See, there's a fusing. There's our Aron, which is now fused with the Evan Shesia. That's where the Aron belongs, but the Kedusha is now encompassing both the utensil and the actual spot, right? The core of the Evan Shesia, the core of the Har HaBayis, is now being given that Kedusha. And the idea behind all of this is that the Shechina is no longer traveling. The Shechina now permanently belongs for all time. For all time, the Shechina permanently belongs here in the heart of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That is the radical transformation which is happening. We had one radical transformation in Jewish history, which was the Shechina transferred its abode from Shamayim to Eretz. That is what happened at Matan Torah, and then the Hakamas HaMishkan. And now the second transformation is, rather than traveling wherever the Aron is, wherever the Mishkan is, it's permanently supposed to reside. The permanently designated location is going to be the Har HaBayis, and in particular the Evan Shesia in the heart of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what the Navi here is calling again and again and again, the Makom Ha'aron. That's what the Dat Mikra was getting at literally, and that's what the Meshech Chachma is getting at over here halachically. To explain why in the second base of Mikdash they could continue with the Avodah of Yom Kippur, even though there's no longer any Aron. Now, we should know, the Rambam is paskening here, the Meshech Chachma is as well, that the Aron was never taken away, right? That Shlomo knows the Aron is going to be taken one day. Again, next week we'll see the basis for that in the Psukim, we'll see some of that in Shudas this week. But the Gemara, we should just know, has two different opinions. The Gemara does have an opinion, and actually the Gemara says that the seeming opinion of the simple Mishnah on Yuma is that the Aron was taken away. The Gemara says there's an opinion that the Aron was taken to Babel. The Aron was exiled to Babel. That is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. He based it off of this pasuk in Divrei HaYamim, where Nebuchadnezzar, during the exile of Yoyachin, the pasuk says he brought Yoyachin to Babel. Im klei chemdas beis Hashem, with the precious vessel of the beis Hashem. What is the precious vessel? So Eliezer understood that the precious vessel was the Aron Kodesh. Rishon Baruch Chai agreed with him as well, but Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rav Nachman quotes the Chacham disagree, and we don't seem to have passed in the halacha that the Aron was taken to Babel. We should just know that that there are these two opinions about that. Now, the main source which the Gemara relies on to prove that the Aron was never taken away, Aron bemkomo nignaz, right? That it was put in the foundations of the Mikdash. It was hidden in the places that Shlomo had prepared long ago. Is the very next pasuk, Lacham Aleph Perek Ches, pasuk Ches. So without further ado, let's go to the pasuk because there is a lot to say. Believe me, a lot to say about this pasuk. As it says, Vayarichu habadim vayeru rashi habadim and hakodesh al pnei hadvir. So now they bring the Aron Kodesh into the Kodesh HaKadashim. So I wouldn't translate. The poles are long enough. The Radak explains they push the poles forward. The Ravag thinks that they added extensions to the poles, but the Aron Kodesh has poles. Those poles can never be removed, and the poles were pushed forward so that you could see them from the dvir, v'lo yiro hachutza, but they couldn't be seen from outside. That pasuk seems contradictory, and we'll have to explain it in a second. They could be seen, but they couldn't be seen. What does that mean? I do not know. I mean, I do know, but you know, as of now, I do not know. And then the pasuk concludes, Vayusham ad hayom hazeh, and they were there until this very day. It is that line that they were there until this very day, which the Gemara cites to prove that the Aron never left Yerushalayim. The Gemara pushes back. It quotes other psukim where ad hayom hazeh does not mean until this very day. For example, there's a pasuk about the Yevusim being in Yerushalayim. Ad hayom hazeh. So we know the Yevusim are not Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. But okay, fine. We should just know that's the main that is the main pasuk in the Gemara. The other main source is the very strong tradition that Chloe had, but is the main source that the Aron never left Yerushalayim. Now, what is going on with the poles? The poles could be seen. Right? So they could be seen from the Devir, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but they couldn't be seen outside. So Rashi quotes the Gemara, and we have to unpack what the Gemara is saying. This is going to be kind of shocking. What we're going to see, just before we do it, we're going to see three opinions in the Mefarshim. What is the symbolism here of the poles of the Aron? So Rashi writes, Ro Rashi Rashi Abadim, a paruches shekineged haPesach ba'amatraksin, that the poles of the Aron poked through the curtain which was covering the opening to the amatraksin. The amatraksin we talked about a couple of weeks ago was the wall which divided off the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadashim. In Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, it was made out of solid wall, but there had to be an opening to the wall, so there was a curtain which covered the opening. So that curtain, Rashi explains, the poles of the Aron are poking through. Now, what does it mean poking through? Does it mean that there are holes for the poles to actually, you know, go mamash through the paroches? So Rashi quotes the Gemara, where it says, no. Yachol yiyu mekarin ba'viyotzin. You think the poles ripped through the curtain and stuck through it outside? So that's what the pasuk says. Tamalomar lo yiro hachutza. Right? They couldn't be seen from the outside. So when the pasuk says they could be seen but not be seen, what does that mean? Haketzad dochin ubolten. So the poles of the Aron pushed, right? They protruded. They didn't actually come out. They just pushed the curtain outward. Now Rashi quotes a shocking mashal, and we're going to see the Gemara. We're going to see how shocking it is. Ki in shnei da de isha, like the two breasts of a woman. Ki in shneimar bein shaddai yalin. Both the pasuk and Shir HaShirim, where Shlomo talks about a Kadosh Baruch Hu resting on the bosom of Kol Yisrael. Gemara in Yuma is where Rashi is getting this from. And what we have here is an extraordinary image. Why would we have the poles of the Aron in a way that everybody could see look like Shnei Dadei Isha? So the Gemara is explaining over here that this is there to symbolize the love and the closeness between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. We have the Dadei Isha, which are supposed to be That's supposed to be Klal Yisrael. It's about to be Shir HaShirim. And where is the Shechina residing? On top of the Aron, with Bein HaBadim, right between the poles. So that image of the poles of the Aron and the Shechina between them is supposed to capture this pasuk in Shir HaShirim of Bein Shaddai Yalin. Unbelievable. The Gemara then continues, and the Gemara says with this theme about the mashal of the relationship of Klal Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu with man and woman. Amr of Katina b'shash to how Yisrael olin the regel. So Klal Yisrael went on Aliyah the regel, megalin lahem es haparoches. So they pulled back the paroches. This means umarin lahem es hakruvim, and they showed Klal Yisrael the kruvim. Shehayu ma'orim zeh bazeh. The two kruvim were embracing each other. The omrim lahen re'uchi baschem lifnei hamakom kechibas zachar nekeva. And the Kohanim would tell the Jews who would assemble, look at your love with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It is like the love of man and woman. So that is the symbolism of the Badi Ha'aron, the poles of the Aron, and of the Kruvim, all just unabashed, the love between the Kadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. The Gemara then concludes this this image with Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman, what's going on over here? We have to understand what's changed now in Perek Ches of Malachim Aleph, the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Amar Rav Nachman, Mashal Lakala. We can compare this to a bride. Kolzman shehi beveis avia, tznuah mibayla. As long as she is living in her father's house, she hasn't moved in with her husband, so she's exceptionally modest around her husband. Rashi explains this is a reference to the Mishkan, which is in the desert. When we're in the desert is not where it's not Eretz Yisrael. In the desert, nobody could see what's happening in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Kohanim never opened up the Paroches in the Mishkan. However, Haven Shabasa LeBeis Chamel, once the Kala comes to her father's house, to her husband's house, or her father-in-law's house, Eina Tznu Mibayla, she's no longer modest around her husband. She and her husband are comfortable letting everybody know that they're husband and wife. That is what's happening in the Mikdash. Once we're in the Mikdash, what the Gemara is saying, what the Rashi is trying to capture, there is a maturity which has been achieved of the relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Until now, the whole period from Har Sinai until Shlomo HaMelech was like a period of Kiddushin. We were at the first stage of marriage, but the marriage had not reached the full maturity of Nisuin. Now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes into Yerushalayim, into the Beis HaMikdash, into the permanent spot in our land, that is the Nisuin. This is the full fledging of the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael, and that is symbolized by the Kruvim, which everyone now can see, and that is symbolized what they're doing with the Badi Ha'aron, this shocking image, but that has such a deep message about what the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael is, everything we have in Shir HaShirim. It's amazing. As amazing as that is, we should just know that there are a couple of other essential ideas that the Malbim draws out from this idea that the poles of the Aron poked through the and made the Paroches protrude. So let's go look at those. I want to see those carefully as well. The Malbim in general has a mashal. He says that the relationship between the Aron and the rest of the Mikdash is like the relationship between the brain and the rest of the body. No one sees the brain, but the brain is the one which is controlling and affecting everything, right? If you have no brain, then what are the arms doing? What are the legs doing? Everyone sees the movement of the arms and the legs, but those are really being directed from the brain. So he says that's what's happening with the Aron. If the Aron is similar to the brain, so what are the Badim? So he writes, Shabadim hayudugmas chut hashidra. He says the poles, those are like the spinal cord. What does the spine do? Hayotze min hamoach, the spine extends down from the brain, which no one can see. Umeshaleach me'inos hargasha l'klal hagvia, and that is what sends all the feelings to the rest of the body. Ad hamakom neged halev shesham ikar pu'ulas nefesh. What is the main part of the body? What animates the body is the heart, right? Nefesh chiyunis, right? What makes you move? What supplies blood to the whole body is the heart. So you have the idea of the brain of the Mikdash is the Aron. It's separated from everything, but there's the spine, the Badim, which connected to the lave. What is the lave? The lave is the Heichal. The Heichal, that's where the menorah, that's where the Mizbech HaKetores, that's where the Shulchan are. That's where Avoda is being done every day. So he suggests that with the symbolism of the poles is that while the Aron is separate, is literally Kodesh HaKadashim. We never see it. It is transcendent. It is severed from everything else. His suggestion for the poles is that they symbolize the connection between the Aron and everything else. That's why there's literally a physical connection where the poles are extending so that they can bump against the curtain. That's shot number two. Shot number three, the Malbim continues with a quick hitter. The Malbim says he goes back to the image of Chazal, that the poles of the Aron protruded through the curtain, or made the curtain, stick forward like Dade Isha. He says, "Visham hayadugmas hashadayim hamaleim chalav," like breasts which are full of milk. So, right, Chazal did not focus on the milk. Chazal focused on the romance between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Malbim here is focusing on the milk. Which what does Rashi say on the pasuk in Shir HaShirim? He says that right, this is the Torah. This is Moshe and Aaron. This is the nurturing that Torah offers Klal Yisrael. So the third point, the third image we have over here is that the Aron isn't something which just is kept in an isolated ivory tower and has nothing to do with us. The Aron contains within it the Luchos. The Aron contains within it Torah, and Torah is that which sustains us. That's what gives us. That's how we're able to live and breathe every single day. He says that's the suggest that that's. A symbol of Shnei Dadi Isha of right of the Shadayim. So those are the three. Number one, the Gemara Rashi Shir HaShirim about the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, like husband and wife. Number two, the relationship between the Aron and the rest of the Mikdash, the brain, which animates, right, which affects the rest of the body, even though you don't see it. And the number three is the Torah, which is compared to milk, which is contained in the Aron, but that spills out to all of us. Okay, with a few minutes left, I want to move the rest of this of the parak a little bit more quickly and just drive home a couple of more key ideas which are coming out of these psukim. After the Aron is brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so the Navi tells us that the Aron only has the two luchos, which Moshe left there at Chorev, which is our Sinai, at the bris which Hashem had established with Bnei Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim. Now, we know this, although there's a whole discussion, Mefarshim over here, what exactly was in the Aron. Was there only the luchos? Were there other things as well? Moshe's Sefer Torah, the Shivrei Luchos. Okay, it's a whole discussion, but I want to leave it on the side for now. We know what's in the Aron, right? It's like a reasonably famous thing. Like, I'll ask my kids Parsha questions from first grade and nursery, respectively, this week, and hopefully they know what was in the Aron after they did Bayakal in school. So I hope I'll let you know next week. So why does the Navi have to tell us this? And why does the Navi tell us that, oh yeah, Luchos are from Har Sinai, and there's this thing called Matan Torah. I'm not sure if you heard of it, but Hashem made a bris with Bnei Yisrael when they left Egypt. Like, obviously, of course we know all this. The Navi is going out of its way to mention this. Why? Because we are clearly trying to connect what's happening now with the construction of the completion of the Mikdash to what happened then at Har Sinai, right? That's going to become even more blatant in the next couple of psukim. After the Kohanim bring the Aron into the Mikdash, they bring it to that special place. They bring it to the Evan Shasiyah, the Makom Ha'aron, the primordial spot where the Aron was always supposed to be and now is, and that spot is now transformed and sanctified for all time. So what happens? The cloud fills the house of Hashem. The Kohanim couldn't stand there to serve because the cloud was there. The glory of Hashem fills the whole house. This is a clear, obvious reference or echo to what happens at the end of Sefer Shmos. When Moshe completes the construction of the Mishkan, virtually the same exact thing happens. The cloud covers the Ohel Moed. The kavod of Hashem fills the Mishkan. Moshe is unable to enter the Mishkan, right? The revelation here is so powerful. Moshe is able to walk up Har Sinai. The revelation of Har Sinai, Moshe is able to enter, but the revelation of the Mishkan is even greater. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot penetrate that. So the revelation at the completion of the Mishkan is clearly being referenced. They have a very similar thing with the construction of the Mikdash over here. So we keep on coming back to this. This goes back to the idea we had at the very, very, very beginning of the description of the construction of the Mikdash. If you remember, the Navi told us it happened 480 years after Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim that this whole story unfolds. And why is that the case? Because all we're doing now is we are completing the journey that began at Yetzias Mitzrayim. When does Yetzias Mitzrayim end? It doesn't end at Har Sinai. It doesn't end when they get into Eretz Yisrael. Yetzias Mitzrayim ends. We'll get the last of course just to the end of the sheet to really nail this down. Yetzias Mitzrayim ends. Geula is completed when we come to Yerushalayim and have a permanent Beis HaMikdash. And Chazal say that there are three mitzvahs that Bnei Yisrael have when we enter the land of Israel. We have to set up a king. We have to get rid of Amalek. All right, you can't have Hashem in the world without the destruction of Amalek. And David HaMelech kind of pulled it off in the end of Shmuel Aleph. And then you have to have a building of Beis HaBachir. Right? That's the completion of Geula is what's happening over here. The revelation of Mishkan is being linked now to the revelation at the Mikdash. That's what's so exciting. The house is beautiful, but the focus is not on the building. The focus is on bringing the Aron to its location, to its spot. And now the Shekhinah is residing in the place where it's always supposed to reside. The Malbim has a couple of sharp insights. There's just one particular I want to note. He says there's one major difference between the nature of the revelation here by the Mikdash and the revelation by the Mishkan in Parshas Pekudei. Points out that in Pekudei, the cloud covers the Mishkan. Vayachas ha'anan es ohel moed, And the kavod fills the Mishkan. What is the difference between anan and kavod? So the Malbim writes that the kavod is the or hanivra. The kavod is the blinding light, which represents the Shekhinah, and the anan is the cloud, which represents the Shekhinah. Those two are separate, he points out, in the Mishkan. One is on top of the Ol Moed, and the light is inside the Ol Moed. In contrast, I'm just going to scroll up for a second to the way it's described over here, where we see in the Malbim. We see both now, I guess. So the Anan fills the house, the cloud fills the house, and the Kavod fills the house. So they're united, right? You have both the light and the cloud in the house. So why is that the case? What's the difference? Explain the Malbim. In the Mikdash, Shaya Anan va'Kavod shnei bifnim. Both the cloud and the light are on the inside. Ki shechinas ha-mishkan lo ha-sakvua. The Shechina did not permanently reside in the Mishkan. That's why, even though the light, the kavod, was in the Mishkan, the cloud was always hovering over it. Because what does Torah say after this? Whenever it's time for Bnei Yisrael to leave, what does the Anan do? The Anan rises up, and the cloud moves on, and then Bnei Yisrael follow the cloud. So the cloud does not permanently reside. It doesn't go inside the Mishkan because the cloud represents the fact that we still have a ways to go. We're always traveling. We're always chasing after the cloud, right? Valkein haya hakavod megula b'li levush shezem morash eino bakomo. So the light was there without the cloud. This shows that this isn't where it's supposed to be permanently. What happens in the Mikdash? The cloud of the Shekhinah, the light of the Shekhinah, are united. He points out this is what it was like by Har Sinai, was that they were united. So they were separate. Now the Mikdash, they're together because this is the permanent location. Okay, very helpful insight from the Malbim. Let's quickly go through the last few psukim, and then we'll close up the parak. Shlomo turns and he gives, first he says, Hashem Amar Lishkon Ba'arafel. Hashem had said he was going to dwell in the cloud. Okay, Mefarshim here discuss whether this is just a reference to Hashem saying, you know, that his Shekhinah will reside among us. Rashi quotes a drashna, though, that it could mean that that Hashem had promised that there would be this revelation in Parshas Achrimos. So the Torah says at the beginning of the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol, Torah says, Kiba Anan Ira'e al HaKapores, right? I will appear in a cloud over the Kapores. So Rashi quotes the Gemara, when is this going to happen? When is the cloud going to appear over the Kapores? It fits the Malbim's point from a second ago. When is the cloud going to be there? Dafka in Beis HaMikdash. That's what Rashi says over here. Heftiach, love of Elishka and Bobus, Mitoch Hanan Barafel. Long ago, Hashem had promised that one day the cloud itself would enter the Mikdash. When did that happen? Achrimos, ki banan ira'e al HaKapores. And now we have that moment. We have the revelation. Okay? Shlomo then says, I built Hashem a house. Then Shlomo turns around, he gives a bracha to Bnei Yisrael, and then he says, bracha to Hashem. In the bracha to Hashem, it is suffused with two things, two themes of the bracha, of the gratitude over here, which we've been hitting on until now. Number one is, once again, linking to David. Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael, asher dibra b'fiv eis David avi u'b'yado mi le'emor. Hashem made a promise to David. Shlomo saying, not about me, right? It's about David. Hashem made a promise to David. Hashem chose David. Hashem was David wanted to build a house. Hashem told David, you couldn't do it, but I give you credit. It's all about David, right? You're not going to build a house, but your son is going to build a house. So who is Shlomo here? He's not the glorious, great, internationally renowned, extremely wise and wealthy and powerful King Shlomo. All he is in this moment is Bin Chayotze Mechal Atzecha. He's just the son who came from David's loins, right? Hashem fulfilled his word. He set me up instead of in replacement of David. So it's David, 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 every single line of Shlomo's initial tefillah. Shlomo recognizes who he is. He knows why he's there. And he knows that if there's one man who is the star of the moment, the man is not him. The man is his father, David. He's in his right place. And that's amazing. And it links with the point we've been, you know, hammering until now. The second theme that's pervasive here is once again the connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? Shlomo says, from the day that I took my nation out of Mitzrayim, I hadn't chosen a city or a house, Lios Shemisham, for my name to be there. So we're going to go back to that phrase next week, my name to be there. And then he comes back to it. He comes back to Mitzrayim at the end. This is the pasuk which the Meshech Chachma had flagged. What have I just made? Va'asim sham makom la'aron. I built a place for the Aron. Asher sham bris Hashem after karas ma'asina ba'otzio osam me'aretz Mitzrayim. Here is the spot for the Aron, which has the luchos, which contain the bris that Hashem made with us when we left Mitzrayim. But once again, connecting Yetzias Mitzrayim to the construction of the Mikdash. Right? Again, that theme has come up again and again and again and again and again. Conclude with the end of the Hagdama of the Ramban, the Sefer Shmos, and then one pasuk from Sefer Shmos. The Ramban says that the book of Shmos, we talked about this before, is the book of Sefer HaGalut VaHaGeula, the book of exile and redemption. That's why it begins with Bnei Yisrael going down to Egypt. All right, here are the names of Ela Shmos, Bnei Yisrael. Here are the names who went down to Egypt. And then it ends with the Shechina. So the Ramban explains, right, what's the great Geula over here is Kishbel Har Sinai v'asu ha-mishkan v'shav ha-kadosh baruch hu v'hesh ha-shechina so b'neim az shavu amal la-savosa. The great Geula is getting back to the level of the Avos. The level of the Avos is where you have the Shechina with them. That's why the book of Shmos ends v'chein nishlam ha-sefer hazeh. How does Shmos end? Beheshlimo inyan ha-mishkan, the completion of the mishkan, uveyos kavod Hashem male oso tamid, and the full revelation of Hashem's Shechina. That's the full geula of Sefer Shemos, but it's not the full geula. When is the full geula? Only now, 480 years later, in Sefer Melachim, where we have the moment where the Shechina is not in a portable tent. The Shechina is where it's supposed to be in Yerushalayim and Ir HaKodesh on Har HaBayis, and it's not a coincidence that already at the Az Yashir, we were waiting for that moment to occur. To the Emo, to the Emo, sorry, the Sakhal is bad for last minute. To the Emo, to the Emo, Bahar Nachalascha, your mountain, that's Har HaBayis, Machon Leshivtecha Pa'alta Hashem, right? The abode for Hashem, Mikdash Hashem Konu Yadacha. In Az Yashir, we had anticipated the moment when we would have the mountain, we would have the house, the completion of the Geula. The Geula only began with Yetzias Mitzrayim. The building of the Mikdash is not just its own moment of time; it is the completion of the story that began way back with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, so we'll stop here. The next week, Hashem, hopefully, we'll finish the parak and we'll see the amazing tefillah Shlomo has. What we haven't discussed at all in this whole parak is what are Bnei Yisrael supposed to do with this Mikdash? Right? We've seen there was a focus on the Aron. Now this is the spot. This is the spot of Kedusha, and that's amazing. And the Shechina resides among us. Well, now what? What do we do? Right? It's all over. Like, okay, we built it, and we can move on and go. So now we have to figure out like what we do with this Mikdash going forward, and that's what Shlomo is going to talk about in his coming tefillah. So Hashem, we'll look at that next week. Okay. So sorry, I went a little bit long, but couldn't help
Thank
it.
you. It was good. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you.